It's all about food. It's all about food. Today I want to talk about truth. Now, a couple of weeks ago, my theme was courage and being kind. Today, it's truth. So I went to Google and I looked up the definition of truth, and there are numerous definitions, but the one that I thought applied to what I want to talk about is that truth is a fact or a belief that is accepted as true. And the key word here is accepted. So truth can change with time and culture and many things. And let's connect that to food. So there's many different areas today where we question the quality of our food and the impact of our food on the environment and society. Numerous topics we've covered them all on this show. I'm just going to touch on each of them lightly until I get to the one subject, truth about food, that I want to get to in this program. Okay, so waste and loss. Now, it's easy to point fingers at people who throw away food or waste food in their refrigerator, and that is a significant source of food waste. And when we think about food waste, we have to think about everything that went into producing the food that is ultimately being lost. So there's energy and resources and greenhouse gases emitted and pollution being generated and all kinds of things that are related to the food, and at the very least, you would want to get some benefit from that food by consuming it. And when it's wasted, all that other activity is really unfortunate. But the waste doesn't just happen in our homes. The waste happens from the beginning. The food is brought to life. There are many ways that food is wasted in the fields. Some of the food is subject to different viruses and blights. Some of it, because of weather, may not grow the way it's supposed to, or maybe it has some kind of frost that affects it, or severe drought or heat. There are many things that can go wrong with a harvest when you're just growing food thanks to the environment, as well as other conditions that we might create on a field of food. And then every step of the way, there are inefficiencies and loss. So there are many ways to lose the food that's being grown and have waste and loss. You've seen food in a supermarket, and some of it may not look as fresh as it can be. How long has it been sitting in a warehouse waiting to be delivered to a market? How much food has been wasted, for example, in a production facility, either just packaging fresh produce or creating something else from the food that's been grown? There's always waste. There's always loss. So this is something significant. And when we talk about the truth about food, this is a piece of it: waste and loss. We've also talked about sustainability, and when we talk about truth and food, we have to consider sustainability, because many different kinds of foods impact the environment in significant ways. Many are detrimental to the environment. Some are actually positive, and these things need to be considered when we think about truth and food. Now, of course, I've talked many times about animal agriculture and its impact on sustainability. And there are some that would say that having animals can actually help the environment with their manure and by the way that they walk around on the soil. I think for the most part, the evidence shows that it doesn't benefit the environment to raise animals for food, because we have to raise the plants first to feed the animals, to feed the people. And that is a very inefficient and wasteful process and drains the environment of resources and also adds some unnecessary pollution, greenhouse gases into the environment. That's sustainability. Production and production methods also have a lot of mysteries involved in them. Many companies are not truthful about the food that they produce. Some of them will come out and admit something only after there's been some kind of investigated reporting about the ingredients that they're using. The FDA has approved all kinds of ingredients, and over time we find out many of them really are not health-promoting and are actually disease-promoting. So production and production methods, there's a lot of mysteries involved when we talk about the truth about food. And there are more and more websites today that are talking and trying to expose the things that are happening in the production of food. You might strike a conversation sometime with people who are in the food manufacturing industry and ask them how foods are being produced. And if you can ever have a tour, I remember getting a tour of the Hershey chocolate factory as a kid, and that was really delightful. And it was set up to delight people, so everything was really clean and pristine and delicious. But I think in many facilities, you'll see something quite different. Certainly, we're not allowed to go into the facilities that are growing chickens for food and chickens for eggs and cows for flesh, all those windowless, closed factories that are out there today, because those production methods are not good. And that's why there are no windows on those buildings. We've also talked about labels and choices, when we talk about truth about food. And the labels, they can provide lots of good information. Unfortunately, the whole story is never there in the labels. We're continuing to change the information on the labels with our laws and regulations. And there are all sides involved in deciding what goes on the labels, and not all of those sides are concerned about what's best for us as individuals. They're more concerned about profit and perhaps misleading the public. So we have labels, but still, labels are helpful and we should use them to our advantage. We've got antibiotics that are directly linked with food. Antibiotics are necessary for a number of reasons. When we start confining animals in close conditions, disease is going to become more of a problem, illnesses more of a problem, and antibiotics are used to kind of contain them and control them. I don't know how effective they actually are, and there are many, many side effects. And some of the side effects include becoming resistant to the antibiotics that are used, so that when we actually need them to cure ourselves of something that can actually be deadly, they're not always effective. So this is a very serious problem. Antibiotics are also used in animal agriculture to help animals grow faster and consume less feed. I remember getting a tour of a feedlot in Nevada when we did the Lone Vegan Preaching to the Fire. That's the name of the documentary we produced after I spoke to 250 cattle producers about the impact of animal agriculture on climate change. And when we were looking at this one feedlot, we were given a tour, and the owner was quite proud of her feedlot, actually. We were told by one of the workers there how they monitored how much the animals were eating. They all had their feed individually set on a scale so they could tell how each animal ate. And then they would weigh the animal so they could determine the efficiency of how fast an animal gained weight versus how much it ate. And they would want to reproduce the animals that gain more weight on less food. And antibiotics are a part of that, used to help animals grow. And unfortunately, you eat those animals, and if you're eating animals that grew fatter on less food, that will affect your own weight. And you might find that you're growing fatter on less food as a result. These are the truths that are not really shared. And then we're confused about the actual nutrition in food, protein, carbohydrates, and fats. And it seems every few years we get some new information. Protein's always been good, apparently. But it isn't always good. It's good in the right amount. It's good if it's the right kind of protein, fats, and carbohydrates. Proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, the macronutrients, need to come from whole, minimally processed plant foods, in my opinion. And when they come from not so high quality sources and they come in the wrong amounts, they can wreak havoc on a body. I think many of us realize today that in the Western developed nations and more all around the world, people are consuming more protein and we're seeing the chronic diseases that result. But there's still a lot of confusion and discussion about low carb diets and low fat diets and high protein diets and wow, it's confusing. And what is the truth? Okay, we'll get there. We'll get to the truth about food. Maybe. And then there are some really sad issues when we talk about the truth about food, because while obesity is a big problem, there's also the issue of hunger, with over a billion people starving. And how is it we can have so many people that are overweight and the same number of people starving? It really doesn't make sense, but that's the truth. And the truth is that food is not distributed equitably. So we have hunger. And then we have the concerns about organic, whether foods are truly organic or not, is another thing that we're not certain of. So many of us want our food grown as naturally as possible in clean, healthy soils without adding petrochemical fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides that are toxic and kill bacteria, beneficial bacteria, kill birds and bees, and maybe even us in the long term. We want to know that our food isn't grown this way, and we call it organic. But are the organic standards that are put out and regulated, are they being followed? Are they good enough? And there's lots of discussion about this. And then the last thing, and not necessarily the only thing that's involved the truth about food, but the last thing I'm going to talk about before I get to the real thing I wanted to talk about, is the genetically modified organisms, GMOs, and whether GMO foods are nutritious and safe. That's a big topic. I tend to abstain from GMO foods. The science behind whether these foods are safe or not is kind of muddy. But what is very clear to me is that the foods that we are choosing to modify genetically tend to use the agricultural processes that are not beneficial or sustainable. GMO foods, the growing of GMO foods encourages monocropping and losing biodiversity and using fertilizers, petrochemical fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides, all the things that we know now that are not good for sustainable reasons and for providing the most nutritious food. So those are lots of different issues that are involved with the truth about food. And if you're curious about any one of those that I talked about and are not really sure of how it relates to food, or you want to know more about it, you can send me a message at info@realmeals.org, and I can lead you to a variety of websites and resources that might help you in your discovery about these things. But what I wanted to talk about is your truth with food. So here we go with the conversation we're having today on It's All About Food, and it's the food relationship that you have and your truth about food. Now, what brought this up in my mind? Why did I want to talk about this? Well, you may know that one of the things that I do is talk about healthy food, making it delicious. I want to help as many people as I can. Those that want help or are looking for information. I want to help as many people that I can eat healthier and live happier, healthier lives. And I do this with the nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living, which you can visit at responsibleeatingandliving.com. It's a mouthful, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I don't like typing it out, which is why, one of the reasons why we have an app, which you can find. So just visit the website once and you can grab the app for your iPhone or for Google Android devices. And there you can always access it. But there's lots of information there, including the 9 years of this program that are archived and transcribed. All right, so I have this passion about helping people eat healthier and live happier, healthier lives. And I'm always looking for ways to make it easier for people or motivate people, inspire people. I do one-on-one coaching as well, and I get a lot of resistance when I do coaching. And so I'm trying to find angles to help the people I'm talking to. Now, you've probably experienced this, especially if you're on a diet that isn't considered mainstream. If you tell someone you're a vegan, you tell someone you're a vegetarian, one of the responses I get all the time is, oh, I don't eat very much meat, I don't eat very much dairy, or, oh, I eat healthy. When we dig deeper, I find very often that, in my opinion, these people are not eating very healthy. Here's a really specific example. I used to do a bunch of tabling a few decades ago. Do you remember that book, Eat Right for Your Blood Type? Some people still believe in this premise that based on our blood type, we should eat certain foods and not other foods. This has been thoroughly debunked. There isn't any scientific evidence that supports the information in Dr. D'Adamo's book about eating for your blood type. But there is good information in the book, which is very often the confusing factor with many diets, and that is it recommends not eating refined foods, refined sugars. And anyone that is eating the standard American diet and then starts to eliminate the highly processed foods, they're going to feel better. They may not be on the ideal diet, but it's going to be an improvement. And that's why many people felt that the Eat Right for Your Blood Type diet was beneficial and good and right and true. Back to truth. But I found that when I would discuss a little further with some of these people, and again, this is anecdotal, I don't have significant data on this with all the statistics that are necessary. These are just conversations I've had over time. Some of these folks would start to tell me how they didn't really feel good and share with me some of their health issues. So where they believed that they were doing the right thing, they wrote a book, they were following the rules, they may have had some improvement, they really weren't experiencing great health. So we tend sometimes to talk out of two sides of our mouth, don't we? We want to believe something, but we often need more information and more truth, and it's really hard to find it. And that's another thing. I hear this all the time. How do I know what I read is true? How do I know if this information is right? And it's a good question to ask about everything. Question everything. And sometimes the answer is you don't know. But you have to do what resonates with you. Sometimes you have to go with your gut. I love that expression because we're learning so much about the gut. And I might get into that a little later. But I wanted to talk about, while we're discussing, how do you know what's true or not? And it all feeds into truth. And truth, as the definition is that I said at the beginning, what is accepted as true. So there's a recent study that came out. And I read about it just this morning. I'm looking for the title of it. I think it was done at Stanford University. It was a study that was published in JAMA, J-A-M-A, Journal of the American Medical Association. And reading the article, they explained that it was an expensive study. What did they discover? They discovered, I'll quote, "Anyone who's ever been on a diet knows that the standard prescription for weight loss is to reduce the amount of calories you consume, but a new study published in JAMA may turn that advice on its head. It found that people who cut back on added sugar, refined grains, and highly processed foods while concentrating on eating plenty of vegetables and whole foods without worrying about counting calories or limiting portion sizes lost significant amounts of weight over the course of a year." I'm dumbfounded when I read things like this because people in my circles have been talking about this for decades. What does Dr. Furman talk about? He talks about eating nutritiously dense foods, whole foods, and not counting calories, knowing which are the right foods that you can eat, and you can eat an unlimited amount of them, knowing what other foods are health-promoting but should be eaten in certain quantities, like raw nuts and seeds, for example. They're very nutritious, and we get lots of great minerals from them, and protein and fat and fiber, and on and on and on and on and on. But we should eat maybe about an ounce or two of raw nuts and seeds a day, and not more than that. And then we can eat unlimited amounts of legumes and greens and things like this. So this is information that's been available for a long time, but it takes studies like this one in the Journal of American Medical Association and a lot of money to test it on enough people that they consider the findings significant so that the truth or the fact or the belief that has been proposed for so long is now accepted as true. That's what truth is, a fact or belief that is accepted as true. So we have to have, first of all, a prestigious university has to be intrigued enough by the findings that courageous people have done over the decades, have through their own research and their own discoveries, for the more acceptable and perhaps more conservative organizations will take it on and do their own studies in order to come to similar conclusions. And then the truth becomes more mainstream. And I'm still frustrated with this particular study because they were comparing low-carb diets with low-fat diets. And they didn't see much difference between the two, and they just found that people could lose weight on either diet without counting calories. And like so many other studies we've seen, they tend to miss the point entirely. And when the most prestigious and the most respected universities, they'll design an experiment, they'll set up a study, and they still don't understand what all the parameters are. Yeah, it's expensive, and it's hard to examine many different things, but some of the studies that we have yet to see are the kind that evaluate the kind of carbohydrates you eat and the kind of fats you eat and the kind of proteins you eat, meaning animal protein versus plant protein, animal fat versus plant fat, and so on. And then so many studies don't even distinguish between refined and whole food carbohydrates. They are not the same. But at least in this one particular study, they are realizing that we do not have to count calories when we're eating nutritious food. The real big issue here is the processed foods that are made with refined starches, added sugar, foods like bagels and white bread and refined flour and sugary snacks and sugary beverages. So once we get to the bottom of this and this becomes truth, truth that everyone acknowledges as accepted, as an accepted belief based on current facts, then we can really start to dig deep and get people to look
into what foods are really important for health and longevity, because we've kind of gone backwards for a while with all of the foods that come out of industry for convenience sake, and now we're starting to take a turn to go back to more natural, wholesome, whole foods and minimally processed foods. And maybe at some point we can actually see some great studies that show what quality macronutrients, what quality protein, quality fat, and quality carbohydrates really are. I'm looking forward to seeing that, aren't you? Truth about food, and truth about food with you. I'm going to get back to this subject of truth and food and truth about you and your food, but I'm going to take a brief moment to talk about something else. It's food, of course, because this show is all about food, and this is something that just tickled me. I read recently that there are people that are looking at creating food from jellyfish, specifically jellyfish chips. Jellyfish chips. And fascinating, isn't it? Are you interested in eating jellyfish chips? So apparently jellyfish are a form of food in some Asian cultures, and they're looking into making chips. And when I read about this, I remembered back to some articles I read maybe like 5 years ago or so that talked about how jellyfish are taking over the oceans. And maybe it's even too late to stop them. And I believed it, because on the times that I was in the oceans in the summertime in a variety of places, I could see them. I could see the jellyfish. I got stung by them a few times, to the point where I avoid going into the ocean waters these days. I like going to the beach from time to time. I stay out of the water because of the jellyfish and because I read these articles saying that jellyfish are taking over the seas. And I took it as truth, as an accepted belief. And then when I read about making food from these jellyfish, now I'm a vegan and I don't believe in exploiting any sentient being for food, but I thought maybe this was someone's idea of a practical way to manage the overpopulation of jellyfish. But then I dug a little deeper, because I'm always looking for truth. And do you know what I found out? We don't know if these jellyfish blooms, if jellyfish are really taking over. It seems that in over time, sometimes there are tremendous amounts of jellyfish populations, explosions of them, and then they tend to wane over time. And what happened was, there was one researcher who posed a question in a report. The question was, are populations increasing globally in response to changing ocean conditions? This was the question that this one researcher posed with respect to a global trend in jellification. That's the explosion of jellyfish. And she posed the question because she wasn't sure if the answer was yes or no. But people reading this report took it as a yes, and it went out of control. And then we started seeing all these different articles saying that the jellyfish population is indeed increasing globally. And this was a case where people didn't dig deep. They didn't read this one particular report appropriately. They just grabbed a sentence and started citing it over and over and over again. It's just another case of what is the truth. And when we want to find the truth, and whether that truth is an accepted belief or something that is just unchangeable, the key is to really look at your sources and what the sources say, and see if statements are adequately justified. I do this all the time. Maybe it's a crazy obsession, but I actually enjoy it. But I often find that statements are made that are never justified and therefore never true. And then, of course, with all kinds of software, we have artificial intelligence where we can have videos of people saying things and we can change the face of the person who's saying it and make it look like somebody else said it. Or we can change the audio and make it sound like they're saying something else. There's all kinds of things that we can do to distort the truth. But that's another story. Never mind anyway. My simple point here is I'm not interested in crispy, crunchy jellyfish chips. Are you? And I don't know that we have a jellyfish explosion going on or not. There's all kinds of things that are going to happen with our environment over time because of human intervention and just because of nature itself. Things to look forward to. All right. I wanted to bring your attention also to a recent report that came out by an organization I like very much, and that is Food and Water Watch. They have a great report called Take Back the Tap, the Big Business Hustle of Bottled Water. You've probably seen and heard discussions about bottled water. Bottled water is devastating to the environment. We use up so much more water to get the water in the bottle so that you can enjoy it. And tap water is a much better choice for so many reasons. One reason alone is that we want support for maintaining public water supplies. We want to use our tap water. We want everyone to know that we need it, and we want it to be as clean as it can be coming out of the tap, and our tap water systems need to be maintained. Having tap water is a wonderful luxury. There are people all over the world that don't have access to clean running water today, and it's something that we take for granted. And bottled water is less regulated than tap water. Yep. And bottled water, they have big lobbies, and they use public water supplies. How do they get away with this? They use public water, and they end up charging tremendous amounts of money for the water that goes into the bottle that you're sucked into buying. Perhaps you've seen some of the photos or some of the videos that show the vast amounts of plastic waste that are collecting along ocean shores and in landfills and just everywhere. And so much of the plastic waste is from plastic bottles that hold water and other beverages. Now, you may have listened to this show and heard what my solution is. So first I want you to check out Food and Water Watch's report, Take Back the Tap, the Big Business Hustle of Bottled Water. It's very good, and contrary to industry's marketing, bottled water is not necessarily a purer, safer, healthier alternative. Now sometimes, like unfortunately in Flint, Michigan, where their water is a disaster thanks to some corrupt politicians and the government not responding appropriately, bottled water is a necessity. Yes and no, actually. It's in the short term a necessity, but people can be putting in water purification systems all over the place, either at the source or to handle a larger group of people. And this should be done. It should be done everywhere, not just in Flint, but it should be done everywhere. Anyway, bottled water can come in handy for an emergency, things like that. But we've kind of gone extreme with the use of bottled water. So here at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters, here in my home, I'm a big fan of water distillation. Now, there are many different ways to purify your water. And I welcome you to try any type that you want to. As long as you get your water from the tap, use your tap water. Then you can purify it any way you want to. I choose water distillation. I'm a big fan of Aqua Nui and their distillers. I've written a number of articles at Responsible Eating and Living where I talk about this. I can also offer you a small discount if you want to buy one of these. Let me know at info@realmeals.org or go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I don't do this because I'm into selling this product. I only promote products that I really believe in. This is one product that I use and I believe in, but I really believe in clean water for our health, for the environment, for so many things. And we use water for so many different things, not just for drinking, but for cooking and for cleaning ourselves too, which is a whole nother thing. But the skin, you know, our skin, it's the largest organ, and water can get right into it with all the other things that are in the water. They can bring it right into your body. So you want to be cleaning and bathing with clean water. Now, I don't think many people are cleaning and bathing with bottled water, but I know that bottled water is such a popular trend. It's easy. It's convenient. We also use Takeya bottles. They're glass containers, and they're covered with a protective silicon coating so that if you drop them, they don't break. I'll admit, they're heavier than plastic, and when I carry them with me along the way, it's heavy. It's maybe a little less convenient because of that weight, but it's so much better than buying your water in plastic. Now, unfortunately, there are things that are done to our tap water that make it unpleasant to drink and maybe a little unhealthy, like adding chlorine. And in many parts, there's water fluoridation, which is the addition of fluoride to public water supplies with the idea that it's supposed to reduce tooth decay. And I've read so many articles debunking this, but also the fluoride that's added to the water is not good for our health. So we want to take it out if it's added. And we do that. I do it with distillation and activated carbon. And other people can do it with other purification systems, filters, reverse osmosis. There's a wide range out there, a wide range of costs. Do what you can. And if you have questions about it, I would be happy to have a email conversation with you about that. Now let's get back to what I wanted to have a conversation with you about today, and that is the truth about you and your food in your life. What are you saying about what you eat? Is it the truth? And are you telling other people the truth about what you're eating? And are you telling yourself the truth about what you're eating? I know sometimes when we put something in our mouths that we know we shouldn't be eating, right away we're telling ourselves, oh no, I shouldn't be eating this. And while I like to encourage you to tell the truth about your food and acknowledge the truth about your food, I also want to say, when you're eating anything, whether it's good for you or not, don't start the negative dialogue. If you're going to eat something that's a treat or something that you know is not necessarily health promoting, but might be something you're craving or a bit decadent, please, at that point in time, enjoy it. Think about all the things you enjoy about eating it. Think about what it is that makes you enjoy it. Is it triggering an earlier memory of good times? What is it that makes you enjoy a certain food? And also tell your body in that time that it can take whatever nutrients are in that food and use them. And anything that might not be beneficial, just let it go. Just let it go. That's what you should be telling yourself. And that's not a lie. That's a truth. That's beneficial and helpful. But what are you telling yourself and what are you telling others about your food? Are you telling yourself you're eating healthy? And what is that? Well, for example, Dr. Furman will recommend that for lunch and dinner, we eat big giant salads, salads with cruciferous vegetables, maybe some red cabbage, lots of greens, beans, raw onions, cooked mushrooms, raw nuts and seeds, a nice dressing that's made with not oil, but maybe a seed butter or nut butter that's blended with citrus or vinegars. And then we can have steamed vegetables, sweet potatoes, a whole variety of foods, all kinds of wonderful soups with all those same ingredients. And those make up a foundation of healthy eating for lunch and dinner. You can have those foods too for breakfast too. And then maybe a breakfast for those people that are more into eating grains and cereals, you might go with a steel-cut oats, rolled oats, cold or cooked, with raw nuts and seeds, some berries, some other fruits like apple, banana. These are healthy foods. Are these what you're eating when you say you're eating healthfully? Or are there moments of binging? Are there chips? Are there ice cream? Are there trips to restaurants that cook in lots and lots of oil with lots and lots of salt? I'm just asking because, you know, very often I find denial is not just a river in Egypt. Denial is an interesting characteristic that is used by many human beings, where we don't want to believe certain things. So when I want to help you or help others, we need to start with a foundation of truth, a foundation of fact, or, quote, an accepted belief. Then we can move to finding ways to help you eat better. And that's why I ask you, what are you looking for? Why are you listening to this show? Do you want to eat better? Are you just curious about food? Are you wanting to lose weight? Most people I know want to lose weight. And that's why I ask, what is the truth about your relationship with food? Actually, I know many, many people are smart. And they know what healthy foods are. They know which foods are good for them. They know that. There's just something underlying where there's a disconnect between telling the truth with ourselves and what we're eating. Does this make sense? So back to the truth about products and what we're using in our homes because we want to use healthy products. We like to make a lot of soups here at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters, my home. And it's important to flavor the broth because you want to eat something that's tasty. And many soups today are flavor enhanced with salt. And if you're moving from eating animal foods to plant foods, you might be used to a salty chicken broth in many of your soups. So what can we do to flavor soup? Well, there are herbs and spices, but it's important to know how to use them. Now, I know most people aren't going to do what I do. I've got about 30 tins that hold a significant amount of herbs or spices, and I buy them in bulk because they're much less expensive that way. I buy them organic, non-irradiated, and I can choose from a wide range of wonderful flavors. When I make a soup, for example, I just bring a bowl over to my area with herbs and spices. I take a spoon and I just think, oh, I'll take a little of that, a little of that, a little of that, a little of that, a little of that. And I create a really nice complex array of flavors that goes into the soup. Now, there are some companies that will sell herb and spice mixes or sell bouillons, for example. Now, maybe we know now that we don't want to add too much salt, so we'll get a bouillon that's salt-free, right? And then you think it's okay. But what else is in the bouillon? Is there maltodextrin? You don't need that, especially if you have digestive issues. Is there palm oil or some other oil or some hydrogenated oil maybe? These are things you don't need in your bouillon. What you need are the herbs and spices. So you can buy them yourself. You don't need to buy a high-priced item that's going to have ingredients in it that you don't need. So what do I suggest? First, buy onion powder. I use tons of onion powder when I make soup. Sometimes like 2 tablespoons in 6 cups. That's a lot. I buy a big bag of it and I use it because it makes a great flavor. Now the French have what they call the mirepoix, which is carrots, celery, and onions, the aromatics, and every soup, mostly every soup, should start with onions, celery, and carrots. This gives a tremendous amount of flavor. When you're doing it quickly, and I know a lot of people want things to come together quickly, that's where something like onion powder can really, like, instantly, that's like the bouillon. Put a ton of onion powder in your broth and you have flavor. Now, there is a caveat. I'm really into the word caveat these days. There is a caveat, and that is I find I buy a lot of onion powder, and if I travel and I don't use it quickly, it will stick together and turn into a block. Now, this can be very inconvenient. What I do, probably most people would just like throw it out and start again, but you can take the block and put it in a food processor and blend it up again as powder, chop it up and blend it up again, and then hopefully use it enough so that it won't stick together. But it is a food. Foods don't last forever. So you want to buy, I recommend buying herbs and spices, but you don't want them to last for centuries. You want to use them. They're not supposed to last more than 2 to 3 years. And you should use them liberally. They're full of great nutrients and they add a lot of great flavor. And one more thing, please don't store your herbs and spices near a heat source. When I was growing up, I always saw these spice racks near the stove. Sure, it's convenient while you're cooking to grab an herb and a spice and sprinkle it into your saucepan or whatever you're cooking. But the heat degrades the herbs and spices. You want to keep them in a cool, dark, dry place, okay? And then they'll stay fresh and delicious for a long, long time. But use them. Don't just let them sit around. Are you getting my point? I just posted at responsibleeatingandliving.com a soup that we just made recently at home. And it was inspired by another soup that Gary had made while we were traveling. So Gary had made a soup where he purchased a low-sodium vegetable broth and added a package of cooked black beans. We actually microwaved some sweet potatoes, and I don't recommend microwaving, but we were traveling, and that's what was available to us. And so we had some sweet potatoes and onions and tofu, some cubes of tofu, and put it all together and made this wonderful soup. And I wanted to recreate it at home. So I put the recipe up on responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I did it exactly like I explained. I used a lot of onion powder. And then the sweet potatoes. I'm really into sweet potatoes these days. They're very nutritious. And they help flavor a soup. They add a really nice, delicate sweetness. And a little heft to the broth. This is a great soup and it comes together really fast and it's really easy to make, and I hope you try it. Let me know what you think of it, okay? Another thing you might read about in my daily blog, What Vegans Eat, is I'm back to making green juice. Hooray! And you might ask, why are you back to making green juice? You might ask, why did you stop making green juice? And you might ask, why did you used to make green juice? So many questions, I know. And I can answer these questions. And I can also answer if you're wondering if green juice is right for you or the appropriate thing for you. I can't answer that for you right now because it's an individual thing. And if you want to know if I recommend green juicing for you, then send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of green juicing for me. I started green juicing over 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 12 years ago. Gosh, I can't keep track of the time. Maybe 11 and a half years ago. Anyway, it was during my romp with advanced ovarian cancer, and it became my medicine, a daily green juice. And I kept the fruit out of my green juice because I didn't want that extra sugar without the fruit fiber. Fruit is great for you as long as you eat whole fruit. Whole fruit. But in my green juice, I typically put kale, collards, celery, and whole organic lemon. I cut them up in little bits. I like to get the rind in there. There are wonderful flavonoids that come in the rind of the lemon, and they help smooth out the bitterness. This is my juice. If I'm lucky and I have ginger around, I love adding ginger. And I love this juice. Sometimes I'll add carrots. Depends on if I've got a lot of carrots lying around and I want to move them through. I stopped juicing a while ago because I thought, I don't need medicine anymore. I'm well. In a way, it was like a graduation for me, that I acknowledged that I have been cancer-free for a long time, over 10 years. I'm feeling really good. And the green juice was always a reminder to me that I had been through a serious relationship with cancer. And stopping and saying I don't need this anymore was very liberating and felt very good. But then while we were traveling in California and directing The Music Man recently, my partner Gary and I decided to drink green juice whenever we could get it. I have to confess, they were in plastic bottles, which I felt very, very bad about. But I did want the green juice. And I love drinking green juice. It makes me feel good. It just is right. So I have started green juicing again with a different focus. It's now a choice. It's a choice for me. I don't feel like I'm going to die if I don't have green juice. It just feels better. And I really, really enjoy it. So I'm green juicing again. Yeah, it's a chore. And there is an appliance to clean afterwards. Some of you may know that I like to make a week's worth of juice and freeze individual containers of them. So each day I can take out a couple and drink them. It makes it a lot easier just to juice once a week instead of every day. And some friends of mine that research in the efficacy of the anti-cancer ingredients in foods like kale, they will say that they are not affected by freezing, which is really good news. Yay, green juice is back in my life. Now, is it something for you? Again, it's really an individual thing, but here are some reasons I recommend people green juice. Certainly, if you're going through a health crisis, green juice is the best way to get great nutrition quickly and easily into your body. It's easily digested, the cell walls have been broken, and you don't have to deal with the fiber. Now, fiber is important, and we need to get fiber. But for some people, especially with digestive issues, fiber can be difficult, and juicing can help get you back on track. But if you're wanting to lose weight, for example, I think eating those greens, those same quantity of greens, either in a blended salad or smoothie, or even better, as a giant, giant salad, would make more sense for you. No matter what you do, if you have a green juice, if you have a green smoothie, or if you have those same foods in a salad, can you remember one thing? Chew. You want to keep all the foods that you eat in your mouth first for at least 30 seconds. Can you do that? I know it seems like a long time, but even when you're sipping a green juice, keep it in your mouth. Be mindful. You might have to count 1, 2, 3. You can't count out loud, obviously, if you have a mouthful of green juice, but you want to keep it in your mouth for the digestive juices to come out and do their job. Digestion, good digestion, starts in the mouth. I've said this before, I will say it again, everyone forgets. There are so many digestive issues going on today. The gut microbiome, I like to call it the final frontier. We're discovering so much about health, nutrition, and it's connected to our microbiome in the gut. But digestion starts in the mouth. So happy masticating. Happy masticating. Isn't that a fun word? In case you don't know what masticating means, it means to chew. Chew, chew, chew. Well, here we are. We're at the end of another program. I hope you've enjoyed it, where we've covered a lot of ground talking about truth. What's your truth? Let me know at info@realmeals.org. In the meanwhile, I hope you've enjoyed this program. Visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And everybody, please have a delicious week. Thank you.